ज्ञाओ भुनक्खु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविर्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Yes, so basically then we have that the Vedic culture then being about how to elevate oneself to the transcendental platform. And then in that, then someone has to, because we're dealing with the material platform, so we have the temporary aspect, then you have the beginning, middle, and end. So therefore there's going to be birth, growth, you know, all these kinds of things. And so then that means then you have to have this regular aspect of someone's born, then they're trained in the culture, and then being trained in the culture, they can take part in the culture, right, and practice the culture. And then the goal of that practice then is to develop love for Krishna, go back to Godhead, right? That's the whole idea of the Vedic culture. Now within this, then there are basically two positions one can take. One is you just are a member taking part in this process yourself, right, and helping others and this and that. Two is you can get involved in this earlier dealings and those things with the children as they come up. So therefore, then one can take up the grihastha ashram. In that ashram, then one is involved with this whole thing with the children. Does that make sense? And so then, seeing that the overall is about the training for going back to Godhead, the training for one's future life as an adult and a member of the community, and all that, one has to see that whole thing in that aspect. And along with that, then one gets the happiness of being involved in children when they're small and all the little cute things that they do. Does that make sense? But there's a time for everything. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, you have young couples out in public and they're getting a little too intimate for everybody's happiness. Right? So, is that a good thing or not? What's happening here? I mean, something that should be done at a particular time and place, they're extending it beyond. And it's considered inappropriate. Right? Because it just doesn't match the mood. For them it works nicely, but for everybody else it doesn't. Right? For the environment like that. So in the same way as everybody has their position. So in this case, the example then, the grihasthas, they have their time when they get to appreciate that sweetness, the cuteness, the dependency and all those aspects that are there in the parent-child relationship. But if they extend it beyond, then it's just like, you know, the same, you know, get a room problem. Right? Like that. So in the same way, that applies in everything. Right? Managers, they manage, they have their area where it goes, and beyond that, it's not their business. You know, Brahmins, they have their area, they give advice in that, there's a point where it stops, and then beyond that, it's not their business. Does that make sense? The person makes money, he collects money, he gives money, he donates money, he gives his tax, whatever it is, after that, it's not his business. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that the Vedic culture is based on what's the control, because it's a society. So how much, what is your rights, but what are your obligations? So people like their rights, they don't like the obligation. That's the difficulty. So that's what we're talking about here. Does that make sense? So that's then where it goes. Just like, does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Another concern for the parents is that nowadays the gay culture is very prominent.
Yes.
And obviously it's bad for boys and bad for girls.
Right.
And it was there before, I mean, always was there, we know that.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, in everybody's face, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
pride. Pride.
Yeah, pride. All the parades. And
yeah, yeah.
Everything happens everywhere, basically.
Nuts.
So how can we deal with that aspect? Because, you know, boys, they see this is not a bad thing. You know, so many leaders are like that, so it's fine. I mean, in the world.
It's just a matter of if they're getting the proper interaction, proper dealings, proper trainings, then generally it shouldn't come up as a problem. By being exposed to, by being interactive with, then there might be a little bit more of a problem there. You know, more than that, I can't really say. You know, how much nowadays they say it's in the genes, so they're born with it, or this, who knows? You know, I'm not sure if they're just saying that so that they can feel better, that, you know, not that it's weird, no, we were born like this, or, you know, I have no idea. So, The Vedic context is that you're dealing with engaging the senses in the Lord's service. That's what you're trying to do. And so then scriptures, then they explain how that's done. Right? And so in this context and in the sexual aspect, then how are the senses engaged in the sexual interaction based on service to the Lord? And so then that's based on creating children. And so then the difficulty with the gay position is the sexual activity will never produce a child. Doesn't matter how much it's applied, it won't produce children. So therefore, it doesn't have any place in being engaged in the Lord's service. One can say is no, but grihasthas, who, you know, men and women, what is it? What do they call them? I think the gays call them breeders. Is that what they call them? Yeah, so the breeders then so derogatory, right? Is this, if they're in the minority, all this, why is all that? But as soon as they get into a strong position, immediately they do the same thing back. You know? They exploit, they just, it's sad and all this. But all, and political correctness is the medium to make this change. And so, and nobody's caught that there's something wrong with political correctness. You know, so then whatever, the heterosexual men and women, then they're, you know, having children, you could say, no, but it's also sense gratification. Yes, but it's sense gratification connected to the Lord. And the other, it's just sense gratification. Where's the connection? Because the point is one actually has to admit that sexual interaction done correctly generally produces children. It's known for that. In fact, people have sex and they're either wondering if they are pregnant or worried if they are pregnant. Right? You know, but pregnancy is the common thing. They're not thinking, oh, we had sex, now I'll get fat or something. You know, that's generally not the thing, or my hair will get, you know, how you say that, I'll get split ends in my hair or, you know, stuff. That's generally not the anxieties. So, but they could say, but it's natural like that. But then you could also say, then how would we look at the context of the Romans, you know, at least whether it's true or not, but at least the urban legend of them eating huge banquets, then going and vomiting and coming back and eating again. So you say, well, it's a waste of food. It's just sense gratification and this and that. Well, that's what the Vedas say about having sex if it's not for the purpose of having children. It's a waste of energy because semen means it's pulling all the essence from all the organs of the whole body, because otherwise how do you produce another body without the essential features? And so it's a waste of the whole bodily effort, you know, like that. So it's considered a waste, and its purpose is it's just like for eating, it's for nourishment, and you get taste along with it. So we take prasadam, it nourishes the body, but it tastes nice. So in the same way as the sexual activities, then the parents may enjoy that, but the point is it produces children. And they see that in connection with Krishna. So that will be the difficulty with the gay aspect, is they cannot reconcile this point. Say what they like, this point can't be reconciled.
Adoption?
Then that's another thing. Then they adopt. If they're celibate and they adopt a kid, what's the problem? Right? You know, as one gay person said, is that whether you're whether you're heterosexual or you're homosexual, if you're celibate, what does it matter? You know, you just do your service and all this. So, yeah, then that's fine. Does that make sense? Yes.
When it comes to speaking about obligations, how should a young man choose between, you know, the need to want to take care of his parents as they get older, but also the attractive aspect of just devoting yourself to Krishna consciousness, like you were saying, the first, which is helping others and working in that field. So, but then the feeling comes up that, you know, when you come...
No, but it's natural. If you're in a position to take care and you have the facilities to take care and you don't take care, then that's not considered good. Prabhupada mentions that in the Krishna book. I think it's just before when Krishna and Balaram were talking to Nanda, to Devaki and Vasudev, then he makes that point. That's the point that's there.
Lord Krishna himself says.
Yes, Lord Krishna himself said. So, if you're in that position, then you do that. But if you don't have that position, then you do what you can. So, in other words, if one's a full-time brahmachari and all that, it doesn't mean that you can't give him a call or drop in or this or that. You know, you may not be raising the money and doing all that kind of stuff because you're a brahmachari, so it's not your business. But if you're a grihastha, you know, or a bachelor, you know, one of these ones that he's an unmarried grihastha, then you should be taking care. In other words, if you have a job, you're making money, and you're just using the money to buy a Porsche because you don't have a wife to spend all your money, then you should be taking care of your parents.
So really...
But if you're a brahmachari living in the temple, just doing what the temple commander says, then you just work it out, call him once a week. You know, that's probably most... Parents in homes would be happy if their kids called them once a week. You know?
So you don't have to change your position.
No, you don't have to change your position. Now, if you find that being a brahmachari it's come to its natural conclusion, now it's time to move on to grihastha life, then at that time, then you should be more involved. But if it doesn't, one finds a brahmachari ashram is perfect and one continues like that, then you just keep that contact. You know? You know, whatever's practical. You know, you're in New York, they're in L.A., then, you know, a call is enough. But if they're in L.A., you're in L.A., and they just happen to be around the corner, you drop in. Take them some prasad, you know, like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yes?
In the example of the child, you mentioned the transition from a child to teenagerhood and adulthood. When the parents face difficulties in letting go, which is common, what is the mentality which helps them to let go and see the children develop?
The point is, it's just another phase of niceness. In other words, that dependency is there, but the point is when they get to an older age, they're going to do things themselves anyway. And if you don't let go, it's an annoyance. Right? And so if you don't let go, they're going to have to go away to bring a balance to the thing. So if you like them around, then you know when to let go. Because it may be nice for you, but you have to remember, is it nice for them? The second point, as you're saying, the main point, is that as an adult, and that you're a mature adult, and they're doing things and all that, you should be happy about that. You train them up, and then now they're able to do something. Does that make sense? So then you're proud of that. You're happy that you can take part in that, and you're supportive in that aspect. And so it just takes on a different flavor. Just like changing diapers goes up to about 2, and after that they don't wear diapers anymore. So then if you put them in diapers because you just like changing diapers, then we got a problem. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So the whole point is it changes. The phases change. So it's just another phase change. It's just, that's reality. You know? And if you want to deal with the little kids again, then let your kid move on. And in a way that they're comfortable with you, then you might see the grandchildren. Then you can interact with the babies again. But if you won't let go, they'll go away. You know? And then you may or may not see them. You know, it's just a matter of what you want. You know, you can't have your cake and eat it. That's the whole point. That's the problem. We want everything, but it doesn't work like that. It's one or the other. You let go, then they are comfortable and come around. Because if they know they can come around and you'll behave in a balanced way, then they'll come around. But if they think every time they come around it's a trip, then they won't come around. And then even they'll be uncomfortable coming at the holidays when you try to get them to come around. You know, they should come around. Everybody else's family comes around. And then they'll come. But if it gets, and if it's still weird, then it'll start to become less and less. They'll be doing something else. So, you know what I'm saying? It's standard stuff. You know, it's not the... Like that. The difference is the karmis don't understand the science. Well, the devotees have the advantage of knowing the science. So the point is if you have to give up all attachments, then here's one of the places to practice it. The point is if... The brahmachari practices detachment by not getting involved in attachment. Right? And the grihastha can engage attachment, but they have to then, be able to apply those in detachment. But the point is you have to come to the same result. The idea is, no, we're grihasthas, we just enjoy. You know, but it's not, no. It's that you, within the realm of engaging the senses, engage the senses in the Lord's service. That's what Krishna says in the Gita. For some, then, the senses are engaged in the fire of the sense objects. That's the grihastha. In other words, we see the sense objects and the senses and that interaction, their results and everything, in connection with Krishna. So we're able to engage the senses, but we see Krishna. Then that purifies the senses, we're able to give that up. Because ultimately, it's not about doing well here as a grihastha. Because in the spiritual world, then if you're in parental rasa, then doing well as a grihastha does work. But still, they love Krishna more than their own children. But it's not they take care of their kids quite nicely. Otherwise, how do they go out and there's not, you know, it's not that Krishna has to spend a, you know, shrink session each time he goes out with the kids because, you know, their parents don't care for them. They like my, you know, sister more than me and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, so they're perfectly balanced. But they love their kids, but they love Krishna more. Right? But if you're in the conjugal rasa, then the household life, you do all the duties and you do them perfectly, but it's a real annoyance. But it's a, what do you call it? Necessary evil. Necessary evil. So in other words, it's one of those things that, you know, it's still got to be about Krishna as the center either way, whether you're comfortable in it or not. So one has to learn how this works. Because here, that means Devaki and Vasudev, they have God as their son. They're still sending him to Gurukul. You know, that's the whole principle, is that it's still part of the system. Like that. And it works. You get the result. But it's just that you may not see it now, you'll see it later. But that so many things are like that.
Sometimes it's a little challenging when you think that your attachment is bringing them closer to Krishna, and you're trying to bring them there, but they're in another stage. So,
yeah, because the point is our attachment will bring, that means our attachment connected to Krishna will bring us to Krishna. But the point is, and then we have attachment to them. But we have to remember is we're engaging our attachments connected to Krishna. But are we engaging their attachments connected to Krishna? That's different. See, now if their attachments and your attachments are similar, then it's one process. But if their attachments are slightly different, then you have to be able to engage their attachments. But we think, no, my attachments, since I'm the parent, it's about my attachments, since being a parent is about me. Right, I got married because of me. I have kids because of me. So therefore, my kids and that should do what I want. But that's the whole point. Is it's about sacrifice. So the brahmachari does what the temple commander, temple authority wants them to do. So there's the idea of sacrifice, working for others. So the grihastha is taking care of, according to scripture, you know, that what the parents want, what the wife wants, what the children wants. So you're still working for others. This idea is that as a grihastha, I work for myself. That's not a grihastha, that's a grihamedi. Because grihamedi means you're the center. Grihastha means the ashram's the center. And the duties of the ashram are the center. So that means Krishna is the center.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it's just a matter, it's just, many can't tell the difference between Grihastha and Grihamedi. That's all. It means that generically, they're all called Grihasthas. Even a Grihamedi is a subdivision of Grihastha. Right? Except in the modern context, you probably say everybody's a Grihamedi, then there's a few Grihasthas. But, you know, according to the Vedic concept, the Grihastha is the generic thing. It means a householder, married, family, and all those. And then those who make the center of attention, you know, their duties, and of that Krishna, then that's all Grihasthas. You know, in other words, those who are pious, those who the center is themselves and the benefits they get from that, they're Grihamedi. Even if they're pious and doing everything according to Dharma. You know, so the whole idea is that sacrifice is the essential principle of human life. Right? So charity, austerity, and sacrifice. Right? So the sacrifice of the brahmacharya is he gives his time and work for someone else. Right? The authority. His charity is whatever benefits are accrued from that effort are for the authority. Right? And the austerity is that he does that and he doesn't get disturbed. He does those duties. Right? The Grihastha then their sacrifice is seeing that everything that's connected to them is connected to the Lord, to authority, what the instruction is of the spiritual master. Just they don't have such a spiritual authority sitting there telling him what to do. Right? Material authorities, yes, but spiritual authorities, no. You understand? And so then that's their sacrifice. The austerity is they stick with that. The charity is whatever benefits they're getting from that, then they're using it for the spiritual upliftment. And in that way then the whole thing becomes spiritual. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Because the brahmachari can be a brahmachari in a Mayavadi ashram, so it's not devotional. But it's still brahmachari. So he's following the rules, he's pious, but it's not devotional. So we're following the piety, and that piety is to please Krishna. Right? Otherwise, the Shrama Avya Kevalam. So same way as the Grihastha follows the piety, and the piety is for Krishna. So it's two things. We accept the due for Krishna part, but not the piety. But then without the piety, how can we say it's for Krishna? Because if we reject the piety, it's for ourselves. So how is it we're doing it for ourselves and now it's for Krishna? You know what I'm saying? So that's why then it's we follow the religion, and that results of that religion or the religious process itself is to please Krishna. So it's the same thing. It's just a matter of the brahmachari has a very narrow range that he engages the senses. The grihastha has a very wide range. The brahmachari facilities are small. The grihasthas is great. The brahmachari possessions are small. Grihasthas are great. It's just a matter of what range you are comfortable within. So, because even within grihasthas, you'll see their range is quite different. Like Sudama Brahman or Maharaj Yudhisthira, right? Slightly different in the range of their facility. Right? So grihasthas have that wide range also. That's the thing. That brahmacharis is pretty much about the same. Basically, if you can't pick it up and walk off with it, you have too much. You know? If it's time to go, you know, they're shifting to another temple, you know, a new temple, or you're transferring to another temple. If you can't just pick your stuff up and walk off with it, you have too much stuff. Does that make sense? Like that. If you need to hire a U-Haul bus, you should reconsider. You should consider maybe the aspect of charity more. You know, as one of the three things that even the great realized souls do not give up. So. Does that make sense? And if the Grihastha, he can pick this stuff up and walk off with it, then either he has a real strained marriage, or he has a saint for a wife. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, the Grihastha hires the U-Haul, the brahmachari, he should carry it himself. That's the difference. Is that okay? Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, after hearing only once from their teacher, Krishna and Balaram learned all the arts and sciences in 64 days and 64 nights. They learned all the necessary arts and sciences required in human society. Right? So human society is about these refinements. Some people say, oh, this is all Maya. But the point is no, because it's engaged in Krishna's service. So how is it Maya? These are the things humans do. It's the environment in which humans do things for Krishna. During the daytime, they took lessons on a subject from the teacher, and by nightfall, they were expert in that department of knowledge. First of all, they learned how to sing, how to compose songs, and how to recognize the different tunes, right? Because those all go together. It means the arts that you can see is that they many times have their group together. And how the Vedic groups them together may be quite different than how we would consider them grouped together. So what's the common element that may be the same as our modern context, or maybe quite different? But the Vedic, then there's the underlying that has more of a connection. Right? Because we see in the modern, they connect things together, what's necessary, but with times, then they make it into a different department until there's no connection at all. So in the Vedas, they have the underlying. They learned the favorable and unfavorable accents and meters, how to sing different kinds of rhythms and melodies, and how to follow them by beating different kinds of drums, right? So we see as we have the raga itself and what works with the raga. The raga, how to sing, how to use notes, to compose songs, and how to recognize the tunes, right? So that all goes together. It's all about the ability to sing and the ragas themselves, to be able to compose ragas or to be able to recognize the ragas, right? Then the second one is then the accents and meters. So then how to sing within those meters and how to use the melodies in those different meters. Right? You don't hear it as much now. I mean, Indra used it some. You see it go back. Agnidev and some of his, the traditional stuff you see. There's that they'll have the same tune and then you adjust the meter. It sounds completely different, though it's the same tune. Or sometimes they'll keep the same meter and change the tune. So you can do either of those, or both. You can change the meter and the tune, and like this. Like that. And so then along with that, how to follow them by beating different kinds of drums. So therefore the beat. So because vocal means you have the vocal part, and you have the beat, or the meter. Then together, that is your music. You understand? So there's two parts of it. So they learn both of those parts. Then they learn how to dance to the rhythm of melody and different songs. Right? So then, putting that together, then now you're able to dance to that because that has the melody, that'll have a mood, so then what will be your story, what will be, and then what will be how you'll move your feet and all that, and your hand, you understand? So the Abhinaya will go with the rag, and the beats and that, and the movements, that'll go with the meter. Does that make sense? So dance is the natural then form of just expressing the music, you know, in a, I say, a visual or it has movement. Right? Then, that was, now what are you going? The song is about Krishna and some pastime. So depending upon the meter, what the pastime is you're going to use, like, let's say he's killing a demon, then they'll use like a tandava or something like that kind of aspect. When it's something with Mother Yashoda, they'll use a different thing. With gopis, a different, you understand? So in other words, that's the drama that's there that's based more on the dance and the music. Then you also have the theatrical aspect that uses music and all those things. It has the stylized aspect, but it's more about the dialogue and that. Because in the drama, it's not about the dialogue. The musicians are singing and the dancers dancing. Right? So then the next stage of that, then they learn how to write dramas and they learn the various types of painting from simple village art up to the highest perfectional stage. So your dramas, then that presentation and all that, so dramas are moving art, and then you have the physical art where, you know, the painting or the sculpturing or things like that, and that from something very simple up to something very refined. You understand? Because the two go together. Like if you're going to do a drama, then the whole scene, how to paint that, how to visualize. In other words, if you can visualize the blocking for a drama, you can also visualize a painting, and vice versa. You understand? There's a connection there. That makes sense? Yeah. Right. Yes.
But when we say that they went to Sandipani Muni,
right,
means he was expert in all those arts?
Yes.
Himself, so he
yes.
teach all of that?
Yes. That's why they went to Sandipani Muni. See, is that generally learning all the 64 arts, it would be standard amongst those who are on the levels like, you know, the great kings, emperors, and that. They would know that. Not everybody would know it. The ladies would know, and in general, the ladies might know more than the men in any category. The society girls, they would know them all. And so the more they know, the higher up they are. So if they know all the 64 arts, they're a society girl that can move at the level like of the emperors. If they know some of them, they move at that level, whatever. Because that's what it said. This is what's used in human society. So the more refined the social level is, the more arts you have. You have the character, that's the first thing, of course. But the character with the art makes it a higher society. So if you have arts but no character, you may be a performer for high society, but you're not technically high society. You'll be in that group, you'll be at that party, but everybody knows you're the artist. You know what I'm saying? There is a distinction. But if you have the character and you have that, then that's appreciated. So if someone there, the king, you know, is going on that, and it's a close party thing and it's going nice and he decides to sing something, then everyone appreciates that. Right? Because he's the king, but he can sing. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So here, Sandipani Muni, then he knows. In other words, he is, you could say, the original Gurukul teacher. Like that. So he knows them all the 64. Otherwise, then how could he teach Krishna and Balaram? But the knowledge comes from Krishna and Balaram because it comes from the Shastra, it comes from the Parampara, which starts with Krishna. And then, like the rain goes into the rivers back to the ocean, then the knowledge goes back to the ocean of Krishna and Balaram. So, yeah.
Typically, would all 64 arts be taught to all students or according to like the varna of the student?
It depends. Like I said, the 64 would be learned by your high-grade kshatriyas, your brahmins, you know, your society girls. So just those who are going to work in the most refined levels. They would know more or less of them, you know, like that. As you go down in society, they know less. Because here, these are arts and sciences. They're not occupations. You understand? When any of these is your main thing you do, it's an occupation. So it's no longer... It is an art, science, of course. You understand? You know, just like, let's say, music. But if you're a musician as a living, that's your varna.
I see.
But all the varnas would know... No singing.
I see.
Like that. So the idea is, if you know singing, he's a Shudra. No, it's that Shudra means it's your occupation. The king might sing for, you know, relatives or that, or he's good and he'll sing for a yagya or something like that. He doesn't have to. He's doing that as a cultural aspect. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say, very rich, high society people, where do they have their meetings and programs, right? You know, cultural places, you know, like that, and about culture, and about these kind of things. So, but it's not their occupation. They've given charity to those, they support those, they put in time for those. But it's not their occupation. So that's the difference. So here, it's not their occupation. So these are essential in society, so whether they're a hobby for you or whether they're a occupation for you, it doesn't matter. They're necessary. But if they're an occupation, you probably won't know very many of them. Right?
Just focus on...
Yeah, that's all you do. But if it's a hobby for you or it's an art for you, then you would know more. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes, so therefore, to be able to organize, you know, choreograph a dance drama or another drama, you know, like this, then all these different things, they all go together. So, or art, you know, to conceptualize the painting and all that, it's all the same concept. That's why you see these are all in the same group. One may say, oh, these are all different areas, but they all have their connection, what's common amongst them. Does that make sense? So then the dialogue has to match the rasa. It has to move, right? It means that the drama doesn't have the pace. The pacing's wrong. People get bored. So that it's the same thing. You have the raga and the beat, right? You have rasa and you have tattva. You have those two. Those always have to be balanced. So the understanding of that being applied now into arts, then that's what you're seeing here. So it's not a different thing. One could say, oh, these are so different than what... No, it's the same thing. You understand rasa, then you know how to write the dialogue for the drama. Right? You don't understand rasa, you can't. You don't understand the beat and how things move and when it goes faster or slower or stronger or that or what beat to use, then you can't understand the pacing in the drama. Does this make sense? Or in the dance. Or so the lalit kal or the fine arts, they all go together because they're all based on this same thing. Right? So when you get off into cooking, now you're into another area. Does that make sense? Now you're into a different area. This art, but it'll be based on the same thing. It'll still have the aspect of taste and then, you know, what goes together and everything like that. You know, like dal and popcorn. Not a good meal. Especially if the popcorn's been put hot into the black plastic garbage bag. It's a fresh garbage bag. It hasn't been used. But the problem with hot popcorn and plastic, the plastic melts, and when it melts, it gives off a fragrance, and so your popcorn tastes like plastic. Right? So that means one doesn't understand rasa and all those things. Okay. Then in that, so having learned the drop down from that, then they can get into, they also learn how to paint tilak on the face by making different kinds of dots on the forehead and cheeks, right? Because that's going to be a finer point of the whole painting kind of art, right? You've learned that whole thing, how to conceptualize. So in the same way, just in a simple form, then you can do tilak, right? Then they learn the art of making paintings on the floor with a liquid paste of rice and flour. Such paintings are very popular at auspicious ceremonies performed at household affairs or in the temple, right? The alpana. So it's the same thing. It's that same art, but in a simplified or stylized fashion. In other words, you have the art form itself in the painting or the sculpting or these others, but then in a stylized form here, then it just comes out as dots as tilak, or it comes out as the paintings and drawings you do on the floor, right? For the auspicious ceremony. Right? So generally, at any time there's some kind of festival or something nice, you see all these arts come in. If it's just the day-to-day grind, no arts. Right? Yeah. They learn how to make a resting place of flowers and how to decorate clothing and limbs with colorful paintings. Right? So the flowers also, you don't just take the basket of flowers, toss it over there and go, ready! Right, you're going to do it artfully, and that. And how do you get the colors to match and everything? So, with knowledge of the painting, then you'll be able to do this nicely. Does that make sense? The same thing. Or if you learn this first, then you would make it easier to understand the painting. But the point is the painting is the central point in here. Then you know that you can make the paintings, you can make the colorful flowers, you can paint on cloth. Decorate the limbs with the different, like the, you know, I'd say the mehendi and stuff like that, which is also art, or these different aspects. Does this make sense? So you can see this is all one kind of group, that lalit kal. Yeah? So they all go together. They all support each other. Then going into other areas. They also learn how to set valuable jewels and ornaments. They learn the art of wringing water pots. Water pots are filled with water to a certain measurement so that as one beats on the pots, different tones are produced. And then the pots are beaten together, they produce a melodious sound. Right? It's a traditional instrument. They have these bell metal, generally bowls, and then you fill them with water, and accordingly then you get all the sounds. And so then they you sometimes hear them in the, when they're, I don't know about now, but if you go back, you have all the kind of, The trying to think of how to say it nicely. When those who are followers of the Vedic culture, but not necessarily, you know, they, you know, more traditional kind of thing, and they do bhajans and stuff like that. They make a recording of them, and they try and they do a wide range of musical instruments. Like that, many times, if you hear something that kind of sounds like a xylophone, but it doesn't have that sharpness to it. It has more of a softness to it. Do you know what I'm talking about? You know, kind of boing, goes more like that. It holds more. That's a Jalacharanga. I don't know if they're still there, but at least 10, 20 years ago, all the bhajans, there's always at one point a Jalacharanga. You know what I'm talking about? No? You know, the Hindu Bindu bhajans and all that. And you know, they don't do it in the Bollywood style. They do it when they're trying to be devotional. You know, they want to create that kind of light, airy, you know, ethereal, you know, going to get liberation kind of feeling, right? Yeah. Yeah?
No, what do you consider the water instrument? Because, like, there's this wind instrument and it's the stringed instrument, like they're divided by elements. So, would this be a water instrument?
It's water instrument, but at the same time, it's a percussion instrument. So that's the thing. It has both elements to it. So.
And the size of pots varies.
Sorry.
The size of pots also varies.
Yes, size of pots varies, yeah. and how much water you put in them. But you can. I don't know if you still can, but you used to be able to actually buy them. They're already made, and then you have a certain amount of water you put, you'll get that note perfectly. And like that. But nowadays, whether you can still buy them, I have no idea. Nowadays, it's more popular wine glasses. But, okay. And they also learned how to splash water. So here's dealing with water, dealing with how to set valuable jewels and ornaments, decoration, ringing water pots. They also learned how to splash water in the rivers or lakes while taking bath among friends, right? So how to deal with water here. Because it's an art. You can't just not in any way splash water. You know, you have these, otherwise then you're going to lose. You have to know what you're doing, right? So then accordingly, how you hit the water, how you hold your hand, what effect you want to get, then you have different methods for splashing water. Yeah. They learned how to decorate with flowers. This art of decorating can still be seen in various temples of Vrindavan during the summer season. It is called full body. The dais, the throne, the walls, and the ceiling are fully decorated, and a small aromatic fountain of flowers is fixed in the center. Because of these floral decorations, the people, fatigued from the heat of the summer, become refreshed, right? Because the maximum of flowers grow in the summer, and that's also when they're refreshing and all this. Krishna and Balaram learn the art of dressing hair in various styles and fixing a helmet in different positions on the head. Right, so it's not just the French who know how to wear things on at an angle, like that. Look at the kings, right? Western kings always very straight. Look at the Rajas and that. It's always at an angle, like that. So. Yeah, yes, I'm saying. Where is our Jhanti Wala? Oh. They also learn how to set up a theatrical stage, how to decorate dramatic actors with costumes and with flower ornaments over the ear, and how to sprinkle sandalwood pulp and water to produce a nice fragrance. Right? So then these means having known that first group, now all this other group can come nicely. Right? Because all the decorations, all the different things, now how they're going to wear the clothes and all those aspects, that's there. Now you have the concept of what's there. What goes, that's you get from the theater, but then be able to actually apply the clothing and the decorations in there, then that will be a finer detail. They also learn the art of performing magical feats. Within the magical field, there is an art called Bahurupi, by which a person dresses himself in such a way that when he approaches a friend, he cannot be recognized. Krishna, you know, so. The kings especially would need to know this, because then they would go out incognito to check what's happening in the kingdom. No one should be able to tell who they are. So they themselves would go along, or generally they would go with like prime minister, or with a general, or like that. Some who are the, you know, most influential and who, you know, overall see what's happening. So therefore, law and order, then, you know, that person goes, the prime minister, how to deal with the things, the king himself. They go out. So two or three, they would go out, and they would go and just see what's happening. They just go around, see what's happening in the kingdom. They see something funny, they go into the place like that. So it's a standard thing. So it should be that no one knows who you are, because otherwise, if they know who you are, it doesn't necessarily work out so good. Either they all are at their best, or then they attack you. So. Krishna and Balaram also learned how to make various syrups and beverages required at various times. Right? So, yeah, various times, having various tastes and intoxicating effects. So, you have to, means it's also the taste, what goes with what time, what, you know, where what would be something more sweet, or this or that, or what kind of flavors that you want to get. Does that make sense? Because at lunch, you're going to have one kind of thing. If it's a snack, you're going to have another kind of thing. If it's just an afternoon drink, it'll be different, or the evening. Does that make sense? Like that. He also learned different types of sewing and embroidery work, as well as how to manipulate thin threads for dancing puppets. This art also includes how to string wires on musical instruments such as veena, sitar, estaraj, and tambura to produce melodious sounds, right? So now we see is that this group is around threads. Right? So how to sew, how to embroider, how to, you know, the dancing puppets, and how to string musical instruments. It means you have to know how to deal with thread. Yes.
Just from a philosophical perspective, when I was reading these qualities, it's very interesting that people think that, oh, we have created the art of sophistication, we have created art, we have created, you know, the barbarians who are just killing animals. But actually everything is coming from the spiritual world.
Yes.
So it has, like you were saying, I guess this is my question, so everything can really truly be used in Krishna's service because
yeah.
It all begins.
Because there isn't, yeah. Yes, because it begins, because there's nothing that didn't come from Krishna. That's why it gives the example of the ocean with the rivers. So, just the modes of nature allow them to move up in these kind of things. Like that. But when the modes change, it all disappears. Does that make sense? You know, it's all that arts and everything is there, but then you have a war or something, or somebody else comes in, takes over the country, and takes all your stuff. Then how does this all go on? The modes are there, the prosperous, the modes are changed, it disappears. You know, or so many arts, I think it was... Someone was saying the other day, they were reading this thing that it was about glass. You know how glass, it always breaks. But back, I think, in the Roman time, then one glass blower, you know, because Italy's famous for blowing glass and their glassware. And so this one glass, maker, he had come up with glass that didn't break when he dropped it. You know, so you could, if you had a glass or a utensil made from that, if you dropped it, it would just bounce. Not like a Super Bowl or something, but it wouldn't break. And then he brought it to whoever the emperor was at the time. And the emperor was impressed. You know, he threw it didn't break. Nothing like this. But the emperor was also supporting, I can't remember what it was in detail, but it was something else. So either the silver or pewter or some metal or something, you know, as utensils. And so that would be more expensive, but if you can make glass where it doesn't make that, means everybody could have that. And so he could see that this area would suffer, right? In other words, he was supporting some area. And so then after the whole thing in discussion, he asked this man, says, so this art, does anybody else know this formula? Says, no, only I know it. So he's thinking, so then it'll be exclusive for the king, and that, not that everybody knows it. And then he said, sure, you know, no one else, family, is it written down? No, it's all in my head, and this and that. I'm the only one that knows. And once the king confirmed that, then he had him taken out and killed. And so to today, they know it was there because it's documented, but they have no idea how he did it. So like that, arts come up, arts are lost. So we may say it sounds amazing, how is it possible? In the Vedas, it's all there. Some little thing like that, because it's always an art. You know, it's just some little thing. And so then you know that, it works. And you don't know that, and it's always a problem. You know? So that's why you know the science, and then there's the art of application. Because you need to know that, there's some little trick. Yeah. Okay. Then they learn how to make and solve riddles. They learn the art of how even a dull student can very quickly learn the alphabet and read books. That's a good one. Yes, like Hitra Pradesh. They took a dull student and then, you know, in 6 months he trained the princess. Nobody else could train them in years. Then they learned how to rehearse and act out a drama. So we see as you had the main ones, then you had the main supporting ones, and now you get into all the side ones that are also then supporting. So you see as with each thing it's kind of getting a little bit farther away. Though they're all supportive of the same thing. They can all be used together. So all these arts have a connection that you can use them, much of them together. But at the same time, it's when they have their own area. Then they learn how to rehearse and act out a drama, because knowing that is different from the drama itself. They also learn, study the art of solving crossword puzzles. Filling up the missing spaces and making complete words. In other words, that's why every newspaper has a crossword puzzle, because it's dated. Right? Otherwise, why would it be so universal? Right? They also learned how to draw and read pictographic literature. In some countries in the world, pictographic literature is still current. A story is represented by pictures. For instance, a man and a house are pictured to represent a man going home. So that would be, you know, still the there. You know, it means the Egyptians are the most famous for their pictographic, literature. And then I think the traditional Chinese runes are connected with that, though they're much more stylized, you know, where you would have to know more to understand it. Krishna and Balaram also learned the art of architecture, how to construct residential buildings, right? Because otherwise, all these other things to do, you need a place to do that. So you have to know how to construct the building. What's the problem? Like a theater, there's a whole science on the shape, size of the theaters. They have set standard sizes. Like that, depending upon how big your audience is or how small. So you don't want too big, people can't hear or see properly. You don't want too small, people can't get there and they're too close. Right? So unless, I don't know the name of it, but in Kerala, they have their standard dance. You know, you see they put on the rice things, face like that. But there's a sub-form of that, that you generally only Brahmins go to. And so there might be 10, 15, 20 people at a performance. That's it. That's all the bigger it gets. It's a very small place. Because they go on the Abhinaya, just to the facial expressions, and instead of just doing something quick, you know, taking 1 second to move the eyes from one side to the other, which is still quite slow and stylized, they may take 15 seconds to move it. And so the intensity of it, the fullness of it, only the best people can do it and only the best people can watch it. So that theater will be the smallest theater. Like that. Yeah? Okay.
So what is the difference between the art in the architecture, and then we have the Veda, like Tapasya Veda, established. When it is teaching the part of Upaveda.
Means you will learn that also, like that, the art of architecture. Means is then how to put it together, the aesthetics, how the different textures you can get and this and that. There it just says that it should be like this, these are the rooms. But then the art of understanding how that should do, okay, what kind of people would need a room, how it's going to live, how they would live, how to put it together, what materials to use, you know, things like that. So it's all based, everything here, all the arts are based on Shastra. Right? So your Shastra is the basis of these, that gives that hard science, and then you have the science and art of applying it. Because the art itself still has a science. You know what I'm saying? But it's based on something higher. So the scriptures will give that higher thing, sometimes they'll get down to the details like that, and then from there you can gate, but otherwise then the arts and sciences, because otherwise where does it come from? Okay. Yeah? Okay. They learn to recognize valuable jewels by studying their luster and colors, right? So to tell what's a proper jewel, what is a good jewel, what it is a jewel or not. Then they learn the art of placing jewels in a gold and silver setting so that they look very beautiful. Right? So because the jewel itself is nice, but if you put it in the right setting, it enhances the beauty. Otherwise, then it kind of just becomes busy and messy. So they learned how to do that. They learn how to study soil to find minerals. Right? So what you can catch where, you need some minerals, where you can find them. You have to know this soil because you know what things grow and what minerals, what soil. Therefore, if you had those plants, that's what's there, or what kind of location, so all those kinds of things. This study of soil is now a greatly specialized science. But formerly, it was common knowledge, even for the ordinary man. Right? So before, because these minerals were used by everybody, then therefore everybody knew the science. Nowadays, you know, only pharmaceuticals know this science. And, you know, and so you just have to be able to discern the different kinds of minerals that are sitting on the shelf in front of you. Like that. And if you don't know, just go for the multivitamin one. You know, multi like that. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaurav Pindati.